Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere Message Broker version 6.1 Security in SOAP Node. Today's presenters are Civic Grover and Minsun Bian. Civic is an L2 support software engineer for WebSphere Message Broker. His responsibilities include troubleshooting and resolving IBM customers' technical issues with WebSphere Message Broker. Minsun has been working as an L2 support for WebSphere Message Broker and helping IBM customers to resolve technical issues with WMB. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Civic and Minsun.
Thank you, Joseph. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Tech Exchange webcast on security in SOAP nodes in WebSphere Message Broker version 6.1. My name is Vivek Grover, and I'm here with my Level 2 colleague, Minsun Bian. I see quite a few familiar names on the WSTI list of participants here. Thanks all. We appreciate you all joining the session. Let's begin with slide number 2, please. So we'll begin this session with some introduction and some SSL and transport security basics, basically just continuing on from version 6. Then we'll be going over the transport security configuration with some detailed steps involved in configuring SSL or HTTPS in the SOAP request nodes and SOAP async request nodes to communicate with web service providers in a secure fashion. We will then, once we finish up the transport security configuration, I will then hand over the session to Minsun to take us through the WS security concepts and configuring a consumer-provider scenario using WS security. Please note that this session assumes that you're familiar with the basic SSL terms, like key store, trust stores, digital certificates, certificate authority, cipher suites, etc. So let's begin now with slide number 3, please. There are different types of message security available in the broker world. Transport security is one of them, which makes use of the SSL, continuing on from version 6, secure socket layer, or transport layer security cryptographic protocols. Through SSL or TLS, one can create the secure connection between a client, an SSL client, and an SSL server over which the data is propagated securely. The other one down in the list is network security, which makes use of IP security, IPsec. This is outside of the scope of broker, so because it's done at the network level, so we will not be focusing on this today. The other type of security introduced in version 6.1 is the method-based security, which is the WS security or web service security, which allows you to secure the different message parts, the complete messages, using secure mechanisms of confidentiality, authentication, and integrity. So confidentiality to encrypt the message, authentication to validate the identity of the user, and integrity to prevent any message tampering. We'll see that in detail as we move along. SOAP node security, SOAP nodes actually can be configured using either transport or WS security or both in version 6.1. Let's move to slide number 4, please. You can see we have a couple of pictures here. The first one showing the same thing that I just mentioned. SOAP nodes can use transport security using simple HTTPS, plain HTTPS configuration. The message SOAP nodes, well, the message-based security or WS security using the policy sets and policy set bindings configuration. This will be covered by Minsun in detail. The second figure pretty much outlines the steps involved in SSL handshake. So just to sort of brush up or refresh everyone's memory on the SSL, we'll just go over this these steps again. As you can see in step number 1, the SSL client first sends a client hello message that lists some cryptographic information, the cipher suites that are supported by the client. The message, it also contains a random byte string that is used in subsequent computations of the keys and so forth. in step number two, the SSL server then responds with a server hello message that contains these cipher suites that were chosen by the server from the list provided by the SSL client in the first step. There's a session ID, and there's another random byte string. The SSL server at this time sends its digital certificate also, and if the server requires a certificate for the client, if it needs to validate the client, or if it needs to do the client authentication, you know, meaning it's a two-way SSL, then the server also sends a client certificate request at this time. Step number three, the SSL client now verifies the signature, the digital signature on the server's certificate with its public key, and checks that the cipher suite chosen by the server is acceptable. Step number four, now the SSL client sends another random byte string that enables both the client and the server to compute a shared secret key to be used for encrypting all the subsequent message data. This random byte string itself is encrypted with the server's public key. Step number five, if the SSL server had sent a client certificate request in step two, like for a two-way SSL, then the SSL client also, it sends a random byte string encrypted with its private key together with its digital certificate. Step number six, then SSL server verifies the signature on the client certificate. So now the certificates have been exchanged and verified by both the parties, client and server. So now we look in step number seven, the SSL client at this time sends the SSL server a finished message, which is now encrypted with the shared secret key that they both had computed using the random byte string that they had exchanged, that this was exchanged previously, indicating that. So this indicates, once this is sent, that indicates that the client part of handshake is complete. In step 8, the SSL server also sends the SSL client a finished message, which is also encrypted with the same shared secret key, indicating that the server part of the handshake is complete too. Step number 9, from now for the duration of all throughout this SSL session, the SSL server and the SSL client will now exchange messages that are symmetrically encrypted with the shared secret key. So one thing to remember is that the client and server, they used asymmetric encryption techniques to generate the shared secret key. Once the shared secret key is generated and exchanged, then after that, they both use a shared secret key for symmetric encryptional messages. This was an overview of on how SSL handshake works. So let's move on to foil number 5, please. Right, this foil discusses the transport security basics, some transport security concepts. Basically, once the SSL session is established, a stream of data is passed from point A to point B, a client to server, server to client, using the shared secret key. All of the data is encrypted. You cannot have, you know, one message encrypted and not encrypt the other message. Everything has to be encrypted by the shared key throughout that SSL session. So when passing messages via another intermediate application, if you pass it to another intermediate application, if the intermediate application needs to see any part of the message, all of the messages in clear, it can access all of it, as you can see in the picture. The intermediate application has complete access to it. Let's move to slide 6, please. Yeah, in version 6.1, there's a hierarchy for defining the key stores and trust stores that SOAP nodes would use. So what does that mean? That means that key stores can be defined at the broker registry level, which means that the SOAP nodes message flows in all the execution groups deployed to this broker will use them. You can also define the key stores at execution group JVM manager level. This would be specific to the execution group, which means it applies to the SOAP node flows which are deployed to that specific execution group only. Then you can also define the key stores at execution group HTTPS connector level. This also applies to the specific execution group only, but it can be used only for SOAP input and the SOAP async response nodes. So now the settings at the HTTPS connector level on the execution group override those at the execution group JVM manager level, and they are further overridden by those at the broker registry level. So you can define them at different levels, but please note that there is a hierarchy and one can override the other. Go to slide number 7. In slide 7, you can see a similar hierarchy exists for trust stores also, like the ones for key stores. The trust stores can also be defined at the broker registry level. Again, that means that all the SOAP node flows and all the execution group deployed to this broker will use these trust stores. If defined at the execution group managed JVM manager level, all SOAP node flows in that specific execution group will use the defined trust store. Now, if you're using SOAP input node flow with the two-way SSL, then you would be setting client auth to true, and this has to be done at the HTTPS connector level only. Again, the settings here also, there's a hierarchy of preference. So if you're using the JVM manager level, they override the settings defined at the broker registry level. Okay, the other one, the CMT tools, the certificate management tools, which are available and provided with the IBM JRE, which is shipped with the message broker. We ship eTool and the GUI-based IKEYMAN, both are located in message broker installed JRE bin directory. Let's go to slide 8, please. Configuration of SOAP request nodes for HTTPS. These are the steps here listed are the steps needed to be performed to configure a SOAP request node or a SOAP async request node for HTTPS. You create the required key stores and trust stores, add the certificates, exchange the certificates, configure the broker registry or configure the JVM execution group JVM manager, as we discussed. And there are different ways, different places where you can configure this. Finally, deploy the bar file. And that's pretty much what you need to configure for transport security. Let's go to slide 9, please. Let's look at these steps in detail. If you're configuring one-way SSL, then meaning the client only will validate the server certificate, which means that the server certificate need to be provided by the provider or the service provider and should be imported into the trust store. The second step here is to point the broker registry to this trust store. You can use the MQSI change properties command pointing broker registry object to the fully qualified trust store file. You would then, in step 3, configure the broker registry to use the correct password entry key. The key, as you can see, we created here with broker trust store :: password. The key needs to be created, as you can see in step 4, using MQSI setdbparms command. Make sure the keys are in the same cases. There have been some issues that we've experienced with some customers lately. The key must be defined in the exact same case as the one you would be specifying with MQSI change properties command. Then let's move to slide number 10, please. So if the configuration was one-way SSL, and we covered the steps in previous boil, in a two-way SSL, we know the server also wants to validate the client certificates. He wants to validate the information coming from if the client is valid or not. Then the client, which in this case is a SOAP request or a SOAP async request node flow, needs to have a key store having the certificate, and that certificate needs to be given to the server end to be imported into its trust store. Now, if you're using certificate authorities, then CAs would provide the certificates. You don't need to have the same certificate extracted and imported into the other party's trust store. So we can see in step 1, using key tool to specify the trust store, fully qualified path to the trust store file. We are in step number 2, you can see we're creating the key store with a self-signed certificate. Then we extract the certificate in step number 3 using, again, the key tool command to extract the certificate in the file name is what you specify with the dash file option. Then once the certificate's been extracted, it can be given over to the service provider to be added to their trust store. You would then on the broker, on the SOAP request node flow, which is the broker client, you would then configure the broker registry to point to its key store. So you also have the run MQSI chain properties pointed to the specific key store that you created earlier in step number one. You also have the trust store where you need to import the server certificate. So the broker has to be also configured to point to this trust store. So you can see using MQSI chain properties command, you're pointing it to the fully qualified trust store file. Let's go to FOIL 11. So we now set the broker to point to the registry keys again for the passwords on both the key store and the trust stores. We know the key store and trust stores are the password. Broker needs to know the password so that it can open the key stores and trust stores. Again, you don't want the passwords to be seen, so that's why we define these keys. So the keys are later created in step 8 and step 9 using MQSI setdbpons command. These are the keys that contain the actual passwords, although the passwords would still be encrypted in the registry, so you won't be able to see them. But the password key is what you specify, what you point the broker to using MQSI chain properties command. Once this is done, you can restart the broker for all the changes to take effect. And let's go to the next slide 12, please. Once the broker is configured, now the node in the message flow, the SOAP request node property, is usually configured by the developer. You can actually configure this. Look at the screenshot here. There's only a couple of fields that you need to fill out. The protocol needs to be selected from the drop-down box. So if you're using SSL or SSL V3 or TLS, you select the drop-down from the drop-down menu, select the choice. If you're using any specific ciphers or HTTPS proxy servers, then you do need to specify those values. Let's go to next FOIL number 13. Now, if the broker is acting as web service provider, then it's got SOAP input nodes. These steps are needed to configure the SOAP input nodes to communicate with the client using HTTPS. So we create the key stores and trust stores depending on whether it's a one-way or two-way SSL that you're using, and then we exchange the certificates. You can configure the HTTPS connector at the execution group level or JVM manager level like before. So the key stores and the trust stores they're used by the flows that are deployed to that specific execution group only. The other option is you can configure the broker registry so that the key store is used by all the execution groups deployed to that broker. And then we configure the SOAP input node, just like by the developer. You configure the SOAP input node settings and then you deploy the message flow. That's pretty much it. So let's look at this in detail. Move to slide number 14, please. So for one-way SSL, we create the key store with a self-signed certificate here. Then we extract the certificate using the key tool commands. You create the key store in step number one with a self-signed certificate. Step number two, you extract the certificate into a file, give the file to the client side to be added into their trust store. This should be enough on the server end, as it's a client only client validating the server certificates. But if you have two-way SSL, then you also need to enable the client auth to true, first of all, at the HTTPS connector level in the execution group. So you use MQSI change properties with the minus O HTTPS connector and set the minus N client out to minus V true. You would then also import the certificate by the client into the server trust store using the key tool command. So let's go to slide number 15. Okay, so now we've created the key stores, we've added the certificates, and now we need to point the execution groups to this key store. So let's do it at the we're going to do it at the JVM manager level at this time. So again, to let the broker know about the password to be used for this key store, you would create a key in the broker registry, broker key store, :, password. If it's a two-way SSL, then you have a trust store containing the client certificate that you have added. So we point the execution group JVM manager to this trust store, and with the MQS sidechain properties command with fully qualified key store file name. Then you would again also do the run step number four, MQS sidechain properties, to set the trust store password key in the registry. These keys must be created. Let's move to slide number 16. So these keys must be created for both broker key store as well as for the broker trust store in the broker registry using MQSI setdv forms command. Let's go to slide number 17. So yeah, this is a snapshot of what SOAP input node properties looks like that you would need to change. All you do is check the use HTTPS checkbox. If the address, if your URL address contains HTTPS, then this checkbox is automatically selected, but a user can still manually override the setting. Once you do this, you just save and deploy the flow. And that's it. That covers the that would cover the HTTPS configuration for the server as well as for the client that we had finished earlier. So let's go to point number 18. Couple of known problems that we've seen, just added for your knowledge so you're aware of these two common issues. One common problem that you might face if you're using a flow with the SOAP request node and another one with the SOAP input node, meaning the broker is acting as a client, as a SSL client as well as an SSL server. So the SOAP request node, the problem is the SOAP request node protocol defaults to SSL v3. But the SOAP input node protocol defaults to a TLS. So obviously, if they're using different protocols, they will not be able to communicate with each other. So once you configure the HTTPS, define the HTTPS configuration, the two will not be able to communicate with each other. So the workaround at this moment, at this point, is to manually change the protocol used by. You can either change the protocol at the SOAP input node level. You can change it to SSL v3 by changing the protocol setting and with the MQSI. By changing the MQSI change properties using MQSI change properties command, you can specify with if you run it on the -o the object HTTPS connector, change the -10 SSL protocol to -VSSL v3. The other option is you can change the setting on the SOAP request node. You can directly, you don't need to run the MQSI change properties command or any command because it requires recycling the broker. You can simply change it at the SOAP request node in the properties folder, in the properties tab, in the node, in the toolkit. So change that to TLS. And it will require you to redeploy the flow. This problem will be fixed in, it will be addressed in Fix Pack 4. The other known problem is that the SOAP input node ignores the parameters setting for the key store file at the HTTPS connector level. So this is already fixed in Fix Pack 3 though, but one suggestion would be to try and be at the latest fix pack level if you're using HTTPS on the SOAP nodes. It would be just be healthier, I guess. With this, we finished the HTTPS transport security configuration on SOAP nodes. I will now hand over the session to Min Sung, who will take us through web service security configuration. Let's move with slide number 19.
Thanks, Eric. Hello, everyone. Now we will discuss WS security. Let's go to slide number 20. WS security is actually a large set of specifications, such as it has WS secure conversation, WS Trust and WS Privacy and so on. And the WS Security Policy is one of them, because WS Security specification is very large. Many software vendors do not implement the whole specification and normally just implement the security features that are visible to their product. Message Broker version 6.1 focuses on WS Security Policy. In the following slide, we will provide a recap of general security requirements, and then we will show you how to implement the WS Security Policy using Policy Set Editor, and also we will explain how to associate this policy with the flow. Let's go to slide number 21. WS Security is designed to protect the data at the individual message level. This provides a much finer granularity of security than transport security. WS Security allows you to encrypt only part of the message or to encrypt the part of the message with the different keys. And it also it is possible to use WS Security in secure transport. As Vivek explained earlier, if SSL is enabled, then it is going to protect all the data transmitted over the particular channel. If any intermediate application needs to access to a certain part of the message, then the whole message has to be decrypted. But as you can see from the diagram, under WS Security, we can encrypt and decrypt only part of the message. Slide 22. A soft message has envelope, which contains the whole message, and within the envelope, there is an actual message which has the header information and soft body. As you know, this is the real payload. And WS Security defines a security element which is placed in the header section. There are many considerations concerning the security with the soft messages, but the goal is very simple: to keep the messages secure through the intermediate system until it reaches the ultimate recipient. Let's go to slide number 23. WS Security specification provides three ways for securing the web services at the message level: confidentiality and integrity and authentication. Confidentiality uses encryption. If the message is encrypted, then the message cannot be read, and an example of this usage would be to protect the credit card details of the person who placed the order over the internet. And the integrity uses the message signing. If the message part is signed, this means that the part can be read but not tampered or changed. If message is changed by the intermediate application, then the final recipient of the message can detect this change and then take an appropriate action. An example of this usage would be the order information for the goods placed over the internet. This data may be visible to anyone, but it is important that the data is not changed. Authentication of the request will be achieved using binary certificate or user name and password token. Username token has a username information and optionally can have password information. It is used as a part of the basic authentication process. So if you want to use this feature, then broker security manager must be named and then security profile has to be specified. If it's not, then all username and password will be accepted. Let's go to slide number 24. This is a sample soft message. As I said earlier, the WS Security specification defines a set of elements which may be used in the soft envelope. The element WSSE:security is used to contain the security information. In that element, as you can see from the diagram, you see the authentication and digital signature and encryption entries are in the header. Let's go to slide number 25. The diagram in this slide shows the interaction between initiator and recipient. Message broker can act as an initiator or recipient. If you use the solve request node so that it can make a request to the recipient or the provider, then you become an initiator or consumer. But if if you're using the soft input node, it becomes a recipient. As you can see from the diagram, initiator uses the recipient's public encryption token to encrypt the message and its own private signature token to sign it. And the other side, recipient, uses its own private encryption token to decrypt the message and the initiator's public signature token to verify the signature. In the response, recipient uses the initiator's public encryption token to encrypt the message and its own private signature token to sign the message. And the initiator uses its own private encryption token to decrypt the message and the recipient's public signature token to verify the signature. Let's go to slide number 26. These are the steps that you need to follow. By the way, today's presentation, we'll just show you the how to enable the WS security so that the whole message body will be encrypted and digitally signed. The first step will be the set up the key store and trust store. Using these two stores, we keep the certificate. And we can use the same instruction that we used in previous SSL configuration. Once you've done the setting up the key stores, then you need to configure the policy set. On the policy set, defines what is needed for WS security. It defines the different types of authentication, integrity, and confidentiality. And also it defines which part of the message need to be signed or encrypted. And then policy set binding, we're going to define how the security policies are to be used and applied to the different methods. Let's go to slide 27. Since Vivek already showed us how to configure the key store and trust store in previous slide, we're not going through the steps to discuss the configuration, but you should know some of the properties of the certificate so that you can specify those properties when you configure the policy set binding. We use the address book sample, which is available in toolkit sample gallery, and the content in the yellow and the blue box is from the client key store. The yellow box shows the public key certificate, which is exported from the server key store, and the blue box shows the private key of the client key store. And the alias name and the owner name, which is highlighted in red in the box, will be used when we configure the WS security binding policy. Slide 28, please. This is the list of server key store. Yellow box is the private key of the server key store, and the blue is the client public key exported from the client key store. Let's go to slide number 29. Policy set and policy set bindings are defined at the broker level. If you right click on the broker in the administrator perspective in the toolkit and select open policy set, then you will see a window similar to the one on the screen. The default policy set and bindings are WSS10 default. Whenever you create the broker, this default policy set is created as part of the process. Although you can use this default policy set and policy set binding, but this is not editable. So if you need to change the setting, then you need to create your own policy set. Let's go to slide number 30. By default, message protection is not enabled. As you can see from the first screenshot, you need to check the box to enable this feature. And then you need to define the token name, which represents the public and private keys used for signature and encryption. In slide number 25, we discussed how the broker uses the token name. And here you define the initiator and recipient's token name for encryption and signature. We define just one token name for initiator and recipient, but you can define multiple tokens so that you can encrypt the message parts with a different certificate. Let's go to slide number 31. And then we need to select the algorithm that is required for performing the cryptographic operations. And in the message part protection window, we need to define the message part token basically you define which part of the message need to be encrypted and signed. If you specify just signature, then data can be seen, but it's not be able to change. If you specify the encryption, then data cannot be read. As I said before, in today's presentation, we just show you the simple scenario where the whole message body is encrypted and signed. But it is possible to configure the policy set so that broker encrypt the header information or a certain part of the message body. The reason why I'm mentioning this is that in slide number 24, you see that username and password are specified in clear text. But if we use the message part protection, username and password can be encrypted or protected. Let's go to slide number 32. Okay, now we need to create the policy set binding. The first, click the add button after highlight any node under policy set binding tree, and you will see the window similar to the one in the screen. A new policy set binding, once you add the new policy set binding, you need to rename it and then choose the policy set name from the drop-down menu. The policy set binding must refer to a policy set that has been defined before. And finally, you need to specify whether this binding is used in consumer mode or provider mode. By the way, please note that you cannot delete the policy set until associated the bindings has been deleted. Let's go to slide number 33. In message part policy window, we need to associate the message part with encryption and signing token, which is defined in slide number 30. And in the key information window, we need to specify the detail for the token. Let's go to the slide number 34. Let's take a look at the message part signing policy first. At first column, you see the response sign part underscore response and the request sign underscore request. These are the names that we define under slide number 31. In slide number 31, we define the message part token name. That's the name is appearing on this window. Once you associate the binding with the policy set, and then this column will be automatically filled in. And the second column, it shows the encryption and signing token, which we just defined in the slide number 30 under token window. Since this is the policy set binding for the consumer, the request message has to be signed with the consumer or initiator's private key. And the response message needs to be verified with the provider or recipient's public key. That's what all about the second column. And if you click the third column, you will see the list of all the token types. Token types can be specified for the outbound policies and optionally for the inbound policy. You can select the token type from the list, and not applicable simply means that no information is required. And then we need to define the order so that the broker knows in which order the message part policy should be processed. And not applicable in this column means that verification is not required for certain combination of tokens. Once we finish this, we need to specify key information. The first column will be automatically filled in, but we need to specify the second and third column with the correct information. This information can be retrieved from the key store. In slide number 27, we show you the content of the key store and those the alias name and then owner of the certificate is the information that we need to fill in this window. Please note that the call out in the screen, instead of page number 26, it should point to the page number 27. Let's go to slide number 35. This is message part encryption. Similar to the signature, the first four columns are filled in. And you need to take a look at the fifth column, the token. So when we sign the request message, we use the consumer or initiator's private key. But when we encrypt the request message, we have to use the provider or recipient's public key. This is what we discussed in slide number 25. Let's go to slide number 36. Same as consumer, add and rename the policy set binding and choose the policy set, and then, you know, set this binding for the provider. Let's go to slide number 37. This is the same as we defined for the consumer binding in slide number 33, but there are some differences in the configuration. So in next few slides, we will show the details. Let's go to slide number 38. Since this is the binding for the provider or recipient, the response message to the initiator will be signed with the recipient's private key. And also the number appearing on the call out is wrong. And it should pointing to the 28. Let's go to slide number 39. Please take a look at the token column. Request the message from the initiator will be decrypted with the recipient's private key, and the response message to the initiator will be encrypted with the initiator's public key. Let's go to slide number 40. That was the end of configuration of the policy set and policy set binding. This is the command that you can use to set up the provider and consumer's trust store and key store, but this is the same as SSL. Let's go to slide number 41. It is possible to define more than one policy set and policy set binding for each instance of broker, and the message flows deployed to the broker may have different requirements for web services security. Each service may use different certificates and have a different requirement for message parse processing. Therefore, it is necessary to be able to assign a policy set and policy set binding to a given set of web services or message flows. And also, the policy set can be assigned at the node level if it's required. To assign the policy set or policy set binding, just select the edit button on the bar file, which will launch the simple dialog window, and this will query the broker for the list of the defined policy set and policy set binding. Let's go to slide number 42. There are a couple of things that we need to confront. First of all, we need to validate which security is applied on which part of the message. From the policy set, we can check if the message protection token and its type. And from the policy set binding, we need to check if the correct encryption and signing token is used and the correct key information is filled in. After we validate the configuration, you can deploy the bar file, and then that's pretty much it. And then, that will be the end of the configuration. This concludes the WS security configuration with the confidentiality and integrity on the whole message protection. Let's go to slide number 43. Here is some additional research available on the web for soft security, including transport security and WS security. Let's go to slide number 44. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Developer Works offers in-depth technical information. The event link on the support page points you to webcast and conference information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage client to open and update view the PMR online. And the My Notification link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for product of interest to you. With this, we end this Tech Exchange presentation at this.
Thank you, Stephen, and Ming-Sun for a great presentation. At this point, Sarah, we would like to open the line for questions.
We'll hear from Andrew Milne with Duke Operators.
Yes, good morning. We're wrestling with using a SOAP request node, using the username token profile, and when we look at the header message provided by the vendor, the web service vendor, we see the n-once header and a timestamp header, and I'm wondering if those are supported in the username token profile, and if so, what area of the broker toolkit do we configure those in?
Yes, you can use the timestamp. Yeah, if you go to
Andrew Minson's,
yeah,
pointing you to one of the pages in the foils.
Yeah, if you on slide number 30, when you enable the message path protection, and you can choose that header include the timestamp.
Okay, how do we ensure that the user ID and password get in the header as well? We just need plain text. Do we do that through a security profile, or where do we put that?
Yeah, I think, Andrew, the username and password you have to use a security profile. You have to create a security profile, and if you're using SOAP requests, you don't need any security management, like LDAP or TFIM. But there's a presentation by one of our colleagues from Rao Nanduri about who discussed the security profiles and creating security profiles and enabling security with the user, authentication, the username, password.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Andrew.
Our next question will come from Titus Anthony with TIAA CREF.
Hi, my name is Titus Anthony. Vivek, I have a question on your slide 2. There you have a edit box for web service URL, right?
That's right.
And in a true environment, we have IT1, ST, ST1, you name it, you can find out that environment.
Mm-hmm.
And each one has a different URL. So how we will configure that in a deployable bar file, meaning we will provide that bar file to the software configuration management. How we will change this web service URL with a different environment?
You mean you have a bar file containing multiple flows?
Right, in a bar file, suppose I've included this SOAP request node, I provided this web service URL, it's a unit test environment URL.
Right.
But in a different environment, like IT, that may be a different URL.
Right. So
how we'll tackle that type of situation?
Well, you'll actually have to modify it at the bar file level or at the flow node level and then redeploy it. So the only option available for you is either to change it at the node setting or at the bar file. The bar file itself, you can change it when you expand the bar file and the contents of the flow. You can go all the way to SOAP request node, and you should be able to change the web service URL there.
So that's a manual kind of processing,
manual,
right?
That is, it requires manual intervention. You're right about that.
Okay. We don't have any automatic way to do this, or?
Yeah, if you have like 10 different environments or 15 different environments, each one pointing to a different URL, I can imagine.
Right. I mean, completely like in production environment, we don't want to go ahead and change that. We need some way of controlling it. So some way of doing automatic deployment.
Yeah.
So
At this point, there is no automatic way that I'm aware of. You can certainly raise a requirement to do that, and we can forward it to Hursley and see how feasible it is for them to incorporate that.
Okay. Thank you, Ruby. And me.
Sure. Thank you.
Our next question will come from Adarsh Parthasarthy with EDS.
Can we incorporate both username token and the X509 authentication in the same SOAP request message?
X509 and username both?
Yes.
I don't believe. I don't think so. I think you can have either X49 token or authentication. I'll have to double check on that, though.
one of my service provider, like I'm using message broker as the with this consumer, and I have an SOAP header which has got both X509 and also the username token. So I just want to double check whether we can use both X509 and username token.
As I understand, I think you can either have username, password, or X509 token. I will have to double check on that. I could be wrong. So don't quote me at the moment.
Okay. Okay.
But I'll have to double check on the authentication piece. So you have both. You're using both. Is that right? And that's what
working
for you.
Yes. Okay. And I have one more question. Suppose we have some errors on this SOAP header configuration. How do we check on the broker part, like whether the configuration is correct? Say, if we are using the SOAP request node, how do we check that the SOAP header generated by the SOAP request node, and what are the encryption done? Can we see the message, the log message, on this broker logs so that we can double check?
There's a couple of testing tools, right? You can use the toolkit to make some toners so that you can capture the message, transfer over client and server, or you can use SOAP UI tools that it will show the SOAP headers in plain text.
No, I'm not talking about just sending the request. I'm talking about after the message is encrypted or it's signed by the SOAP request node. Can we see that the encrypted header or the SOAP header message generated?
I'm not sure whether you have tried to use the SOAP UI or the toolkit TCP/IP monitoring tool. It will show the headers information.
Oh, okay.
And if you want, I can give you the link explaining how you can do that.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
And we have no further questions at this time.
Thank you, Sarah. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.